I know I usually save my secrets for the end of the episode, but I'm going to tell you my secret favorite candy. It's Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. It's really Reese's anything, but Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the thing that I'm like, have I had a bad day? I get these. Have I had a good day? I get these. Chocolate, salty peanut butter, the textures. I love everything about them. Also that there's two. So I'm like, oh, I get this one for later, which is 1 second later. Anyway, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I love you. That's all. If you're me, you can shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. And I am. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And if you've heard me talk about Grammy, you know that she means the world to me. I wanted a dog for probably 10 years, and I was living in an apartment, couldn't have dogs. When I finally moved somewhere else, I adopted her within weeks, and it was love at first scritch. She's about 2 feet away from me as I record this. She hangs out in the studio, and all I want to do is smooch her and look at her and stare at her. I also like feeding her because I see how happy it makes her. And there's nothing like watching her lick her chops after having yummy stuff like Grammy's Pot Pie or Real Texas Beef and Sweet Potato, which are two recipes she's been enjoying from Merrick. As her parent, I like that they use deboned meat and fish or poultry as the number one ingredient. I also like that they have these real ingredients and you can see them on the bag so you know what's in each one. And watching her do a little dance, especially with a Grammy's Pot Pie recipe, brings too much joy to my heart. Is there such a thing as too much joy? I'm not sure. But check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
It's still your stepbrother's girlfriend with the pet rat because old Allie Ward is back for yet another episode on Mars. I'm not on Mars because honestly, fuck that. I get lonely like on business trips. I'm on a business trip right now in a hotel room outside of Detroit. I'm a little lonely, but I understand there are fireflies outside and I'm just waiting for it to get dark. But yeah, so this episode is on Mars. If you haven't heard part one yet, like what are you doing here? What are you doing? There's so many spoilers, such as the fact that we just found fish in a dry lake bed on Mars. So we talk about that in part one. Wait, is that true? No, it's not. But go back and listen to part one anyway. Part one will give you all the primers you need on what is Mars' deal? Why is it cold? Why was it named after the deity of battle? What's up with its two moons? One named after the fear and the other of the dread that accompany war. And why does one of them crash and reform itself over and over again? And how many rovers are up there? And what happens when you give birth to a moon rock? And where is the next rover going? And what is the best Martian sci-fi? Okay, all of that in part one. But now on to part two, all the weird, juicy questions you guys asked about Mars and had answered. But first, I'm going to be quick. Ologiesmerch.com. This is the part where I shout it out. There are hats and shirts and totes and pins and backpacks, y'all. There's bathing suits now for summer, and I decided to have a summer sale. So through July, you can enter Camp Ologies for 10% off your whole ding-dang order. So get yourself something nice. Sales support the making of this podcast, as does becoming a patron at patreon.com. You can do so for as little as $1 a month because I like to keep thresholds of showing your love pretty low. Also, if you spent all your money on Otter Pops and inflatable pool unicorns, that's okay. I get it. You can support Ologies even by rating or reviewing or subscribing via iTunes. That keeps old podcast van dad ward up in the charts for others to kind of stumble on. And also, you know, I read your reviews. I do it every week. I just want you to feel seen. And then to prove it, I read one each week. Because also it's really delightful that you guys even write that. So this week, first off, I want to say get well to Sarah Maya, who left a review about snapping her fibs and tibs on a trail run. Whew, get better, man. Also, Justin So wrote, had to go to an Apple store to leave a review. I know how important iTunes reviews are for Uncle Al. So I may or may not have gone to an Apple store, used a MacBook there, and left her this 5-star review. I love this podcast and have been binge listening to it. Also, thank you to No Nicknames Left, who says, remember when Discovery Channel, the Learning Channel, and the History Channel weren't just all aliens and reality TV? Remember when you could randomly find a documentary on the Three Gorges Dam in China and would just be sucked in for the duration? Ologies is that. So thank you guys so much for leaving those reviews. I just read three of them. I normally just pick one. But today, I just wanted to say thanks to more than one person. I read all of them that you guys left this week, and you're just charming. You're charming human beings. But let's get the heck back on Mars. Do you want to? Okay, good. So first off, many of you were like, Ward, areology Is that got something to do with nip slips or what? And sadly, no. Areology comes from Ares, the Greek god of war. So Mars is his Roman stage name. And the nipples, areola region, comes from the Latin for little garden, which, I don't know, maybe that says something about Roman breast hair. I'm not sure. I just wanted to answer that oversight of the part one episode. That should have been the first thing I even talked about. Everyone's like, how did you not talk about areolas? So boom, part two. I did it. Okay, speaking of questions, let's now commence the part two of all listener curiosities answered in very squeaky chairs at Caltech by the very prepared and enthusiastic, wonderful, hilarious, brainiac, interplanetary rock enthusiast and areologist, Dr. Jennifer Booz. $1 million questions for you.
Okay.
Is it okay if I ask you $1 million?
Yeah.
Okay. So many questions. I love that you know you are a patron. You've looked at some of these.
Yeah.
You've looked at all of them?
The ones that were posted as of a few hours ago.
This is what I want in someone who studies other planets, is this level of like detail and preparation. Like, this gives me faith in the space program.
Well, I didn't want to leave anyone hanging.
You're amazing. This is amazing. Okay. Well, then in that case, I'm going to do them out of order. Oh, my God. You're amazing. You have notes written up. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay.
I'll put my notes away. Maybe.
All right. You can reference them. Out. You can reference them if you need them.
Okay.
This is the level of preparation is like warming my heart right now.
I was excited.
Dude, you rule. Okay, I'm going to do them a little bit out of order.
You go for it.
Jessica Tubasing wants to know, was the god of war being named Mars a suitable choice? The god of war being named Mars, was it a suitable choice?
Yeah, so I thought about it. And okay. So the reason they named it that is because it's red. And so they're like blood and war and stuff. Ugh. And so I was thinking like, are there other planets that would be like more warlike? And I think maybe not planets, but like moons that have a lot of volcanoes and they're like turbulent, they're more angry. But I do like that Mars, I think it's appropriate because it also has volcanoes and it has like ash deposits and stuff. So you know that like stuff was exploding.
Ooh.
And but it also has these like catastrophic flood events that we think happen. So like,
oh, you know,
like huge amounts of water just like flowing over a surface and like, so it is like, it does have some like super active processes. And so yeah, I think it is appropriate. I like it. And I like that it's red.
I think a lot of people figure this is, I'm saying a lot of people, I mean me, because it's red, we associate that with heat and we associate like Mars with like fury and fire. I think it's hard to wrap your brain around how cold it is.
Yeah. Now it's cold.
I remember I asked a question of a friend who works at JPL. I was like, how do these rovers withstand the heat? And they're like, hey, bitch, it's cold there. And I was like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought it too. Like, I was like, would Venus be better for a war planet? Because it's really hot on the surface of Venus. But then I was like, the volcanoes on Venus are like the lava from Hawaii, which is like really flowy and it's not very explosive. And I was like, that's not very warlike.
Okay, so that's a good point.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus?
I don't know anything about that book.
It's garbage. Okay, next question. Stu wants to know, what is the latest stance on Mars habitability with regards to things such as bone density deterioration and other physiological aspects from reduced gravity and cosmic radiation? Biologically, could we deal with Mars?
Yeah, I think it takes a lot of engineering, but we could. The moon is like 1/10 the gravity of Earth, I want to say, and mm-hmm. Mars is about 1/3 the gravity. So there's still gravity on Mars. And so it's like probably not going to be as bad as like other places you go, for example, like the space station where there's like no gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So you can be a human, I feel like, on Mars.
Oh.
But yeah, you got to take your other stuff with you, like your air and your water and your food.
Yeah. It's like BYOE, like bring your own everything.
Yeah, exactly.
For reals. It's like,
yeah, but it's not impossible.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Greg, Ariel Belk, Craig Curry, and Jorge Barnett all ask the same basic question.
Okay.
So this is a super question.
Okay.
In light of the giant dust storm that seems to have knocked out the Curiosity, what is the most useful to humanity right now information that it has collected
since its arrival to the Red Planet. So questions about dust storms.
Yeah.
And what's the best stuff that the rovers have gotten?
Okay. So like, I was thinking about this a lot. What's the best stuff the rovers have gotten? And I think that, like seeing that Mars was habitable in the past was probably the most interesting and maybe useful to humanity kind of thing, because we can see like how we see how Mars has changed with time, and like how Earth might change with time too, and also like what the different extremes like that we can have on different planets are. Mm-hmm. So that's like super interesting. And then yeah, the dust storm, I don't know, it's just like a cool global phenomenon. But yeah, for curiosity, we're not super worried about it. Okay. It's the other stuff, the other rovers.
And this is a pretty big one.
Yeah, it is a, I think it is a global dust storm. And there have been global dust storms that have lasted, I think, like months. I don't know that they know how long this one will last. Because I think it's still getting worse. Yeah. The first, like, one of the first satellites they sent to Mars when they got there, it was in a dust storm. So they actually couldn't even really see the surface, which was so frustrating. And it was like a flyby, too, I think.
Oh, no.
So it's like not like they could go back.
Oh, that's like getting your period on your wedding day.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, that sucks. sorry, Mars. Red planet, indeed. Okay, yeah. Elliot Anya and El Martinez both want to know, realistically, how close are we, both politically and technically, to a crewed mission to Mars happening? And by crewed, I mean crew, C-R-E-W, not like a crewed mission where just like
C-R-U-D-E.
Yeah, like crewed. And I'm saying crewed because sometimes people still say manned. And let's be honest, it's crewed.
If you're like, what? Okay, so manned suggests all dudes, which is not accurate sometimes. And also, if we want more women in space, let's not suggest that they do not belong there. So manned is kind of as awkwardly specific as saying womaned. Crewed, nice and neutral. So saying a manned mission to Mars, just FYI, in today's day and age, is a little crude.
Because manned is a little old-fashioned.
Yeah, for sure. So like NASA has plans to have humans on Mars by the 2033, I think. There's like a directive or something. But I don't think that there's like actual a lot of like stuff happening related to that. I'm not positive about that, but that was like, they were like, we will do this. And then, but like SpaceX, like they want to be on Mars like in the 2020s.
What?
Yeah.
That's nuts. That's so soon. That's within like 10 years. I 100% have underwear older than that. But yes, NASA and SpaceX have crewed Mars missions on their 10-year to-do list.
So I think that like technologically, I mean, I'm not someone who does this kind of engineering work or whatever, but politically, I think, I mean, like NASA wants to go there, and then technologically, I think like we're capable of some pretty incredible things. So,
oh my God.
I don't think it's like impossible. I feel like it seems really soon to me too, though. But like I said, I'm not involved in that kind of stuff, so I don't know.
Who do you think they should pick for stuff like that?
There's a graduate. She was a postdoc in this department, and she was just selected as an astronaut last year. Her name's Jessica Watkins, and she studied Mars.
Oh, man. This lady, Jessica Watkins, from Colorado, former rugby player, pilot, 30 years old, and officially an astronaut. I tried to see if she had an Instagram upon which I could fangirl, but alas, I could not find her. So maybe the trick to kicking ass is doing less scrolling of memes and not looking at videos of people manhandling slime late at night. I don't know. But if I ever meet Jessica Watkins, I'm going to ask her for all of the life tips. Her tip will probably be, I don't know, just be me.
She's a Mars geologist and now a NASA astronaut.
Holy smokes. And,
I'd be so psyched if she was the one going on that.
Does she want to go?
Yeah.
She's into it.
Yeah, she's so into it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
She's like, bye, Earth. You're toast.
Yeah.
I don't blame her. It's pretty garbage right now.
Yeah.
This is a good time to hit the eject button on all Earth. Where it's like, well, we fucked this up. Mariner Cosplay, El Martinez, Ira Kasha, Stefan Titus, and Justin M. Gifford all wanted to know, what are the biggest hurdles for terraforming, and is there an initiative within NASA or another agency to do so? Also, follow-up question from Allie Ward, what is terraforming?
I think terraforming, I don't know the definition, but I feel like it's when you make the surface like have grass on it.
Really?
No, no, definitely not. That's just what I imagine is like what terraforming is.
Landscaping. It's Martian landscaping.
Yeah. No, you'll have to look that up.
But, okay. So quick definition here. Terraforming is mostly at present a sci-fi term, and it means to transform a planet to be more like Earth, presumably so that we can go live there. So I imagine in the future, HGTV will have a whole flip or flop-esque series dedicated to making over dry, barren planets into like lush boho habitats of our dreams. All we have to do is just painstakingly alter what already naturally exists.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Essentially, what are the biggest hurdles for terraforming?
Oh, okay. So yeah, that we don't have a lot of water or oxygen in the atmosphere. Or that the atmosphere is so thin in general. So it's either going to have to be like you make the atmosphere thicker somehow by like melting the caps or like taking an atmosphere, but then you need a shield for the atmosphere. So like, I think if they existed in bubbles, like if we had like a big dome, maybe you could kind of start doing that way, mm-hmm. Where you can like contain your atmosphere and your water and stuff like that. Yeah, so those are the big hurdles, and radiation is another hurdle
because there's not a lot of atmosphere to shield you from it.
Exactly.
Even though the sun is farther away, you're still like sizzling.
So even if you landscape Mars, you're still going to get a pretty high dose of radiation because of a really thin atmosphere. And also, the place is pretty dry. It's pretty sandy. Now, there is water trapped in minerals, but getting it out would be, in technical terms, a shit ton of work. Which brings up the age-old question of,
Jeffrey Katz wants to know, is it worth the trouble and expense to send humans to Mars, or should we put our effort into more sophisticated robots?
Hello, I am a sophisticated robot and I like French films and expensive coffee.
So robots live for a very long time, mm-hmm. and you can put all sorts of cool instruments on them. And in that sense, robots may be the way. But like humans, like we've gone to the moon and collected rocks, and it's like so useful for a person to just like, if you walk around and you know what's cool and you pick it up and you put it in your pocket, and also be super sick to be on Mars. So that's like really cool too. But then like if you go to Mars, you can't only be there for so long. I mean, without taking like a ton of stuff with you. So like you probably need just like way more stuff, mm-hmm. with you. And so it's going to be like way more expensive, mm-hmm. than just sending like a robot that doesn't need food.
It also seems like a pride thing. Like why send humans to Mars when we could have robots? It's kind of like because we can.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it'd be cool.
Because we did that.
Yeah. But robots can accomplish a lot, and we can send, you know, like 10 robots to, mm-hmm. Mars, like to 10 different spots. You know, it's just like way cheaper.
If you go to Mars and you pee on it, uh-huh. who owns Mars? Do you own Mars if you just peed on it? Is that how it works? Or is it just like does Earth even own Mars, or does Venus own Mars?
Yeah, I think it's like a big debate. I don't know if necessarily it's debated, but it's a big issue with Mars. There's like a whole thing called planetary protection, mm-hmm. where like when we send stuff, we have to go through like incredible lengths to make sure that we're not contaminating the planet. Mm-hmm. Like NASA has like, they're like, no, you can't do that. Like you can't even go place that you think there might be water, because they're like, well, what if we accidentally took some bacteria and then we accidentally colonized Mars, you know, like, oops. There's all this debate about that. But then there's all these like private companies, and they're like, well, we're going to do it. So I don't know.
We're kind of going to be trespassing.
Yeah.
So there is a wealth of information about planetary protection. This is keeping space microbes off of Earth and also not shipping our gross Earth microbes to Martians. These planetary protections include these complex equations of how many spores per square meter are acceptable on equipment so that we can send it into outer space. And the whole thing just kind of reads like a very long-winded, like employees must wash hands after using the restroom sign. Like, so duh. But also, if these rules weren't in place, you know, some people would be like, nah, whatever.
Okay, Guy R. Thomas wants to know, my daughter wants to know how many different rocks have been identified on Mars, and how long does it take to send commands to the rover and get a response back?
Okay, so there are many different types of rocks that have been found on Mars, but they're all, pretty much all the same as Earth rocks. So there's like basalt, which is like what we get, like kind of lava from Hawaii type rocks. And then there's like sedimentary rocks that like from the lake. So like layered rocks. There's like sandstones, like mudstones. There are meteorites on Mars.
They came from
other places.
Damn.
Yeah. That we found with the rovers. There's...
It's weird to think there's a chunk of Earth on Mars and someone's like, whoa!
Yeah, actually, I think that they wanted to send a part of a meteorite back to Mars just like to get home a little bit. Yeah, but...
They're like, you dropped this.
Yeah. It's harder, I think, to get a rock from Earth to Mars like because of their orbits and their distance from the sun.
Stuff. Okay.
So I don't know. I mean, you know, there's probably is one though because things... There's been a lot of time in history.
Mm-hmm. Oof. Danny K wants to know, is it possible to have a water balloon fight on Mars due to the atmosphere?
Yeah. So, yes, in certain places at certain times. So the question is related to the fact that water is not stable on the surface for a lot of the time. So it's either it's like too cold, so it'd be ice, or it's like low pressure, so it'd be gas. And so like liquid water is not really there. So you'd have like a baseball or like a exploding balloon. But if you go like low enough elevation, I think you can get in some places for brief moments in time enough pressure and enough atmospheric enough pressure and a high enough temperature that you could maybe do that. Yeah,
so certain spots, and that's why we need to send more rovers, is to find out where to have the water balloon fights.
Yeah,
and also the street value of that water balloon is like millions of dollars because it had to be shipped from elsewhere.
Yeah,
so that's like having a balloon fight with like gold dust on Earth, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
don't even think about a super soaker, just asking too much. So side note, for more information on the inventor of the Super Soaker, who was a NASA engineer, you can see my minisode about summer that just went up a few weeks ago. Aistology should be a word. So it's all about summer in the history of water fights and also melon genetics. Laura Mulligan wants to know, if you were to get bored or tired of Mars, what other planets would you like to study and why?
Okay. Yeah. So like I already studied the moon and I still think the moon's pretty cool. It's really cute and we can see it from Earth.
It's really cute.
It is really cute.
I love that. It is.
Yeah. And it's cool that it's like part of, you know, it's part of Earth. There are a ton of small moons, like the moons of Jupiter and Saturn, that I think are super fascinating. Like the icy moons where there's like water underneath and super volcanic moons and stuff.
Quick check-in on Jupiter and Saturn's moons. So while Earth has one moon, kind of like a sweet elderly couple who fell in love in high school and have just been married for like billions of years, Jupiter and Saturn have more populous relationships with their moons, like just a sexy consensual poly situation. Saturn has 62 moons and Jupiter has a blessed, auspicious 69, including the icy Europa, which is the star of an upcoming NASA flyby mission and a possible lander way down the line, all on the hunt for interplanetary critters. Despite that these two planets have like moon orgies and literally rain diamonds, perhaps the best planet is just whichever goddamn one you're sitting on.
I really like Earth too. I am a geologist and sometimes I like want to spend a little more time thinking about Earth.
Yeah. Do you do that on weekends?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. You just go hiking and you're like, look at that.
Yeah.
Sandstone.
Mm-hmm.
And that sediment.
Yeah.
That's got to be great because you know how sometimes you'll go on a hike and if you don't know shit about geology, you're like, it's a bunch of cool rocks, but you kind of need someone to go with you to be like, look at that, look at that, look at
that. Yeah, I know. I have a problem right now, which is I just moved to Flagstaff and I have one friend.
So, Flagstaff.
So people in Flagstaff should come on a geology hike with me.
I have to visit Flagstaff.
Yeah.
I feel like you're going to have some serious Flagstaff friends after this. Flagstaff, hit up Jen Booz at Bugaboos, B-U-G-A-B-U-Z, on Instagram. Be friends. Enjoy some rock hikes.
Yeah, you're going to have a whole posse in Flagstaff.
That'd be cool.
Okay, Olaf Dotchke wants to know, is it true that the Mars day, which is 24 hours and 37 minutes, better suits the human biorhythm?
Yeah, I think that would be really weird if that was the case. But so like the the rover teams, when the rovers first land, the first 90 sols, they live on Mars time. So they artificially make their days that long, and they do operations during that. But it's super hard because the Earth is not on that time. So then they'd be awake like in the middle of the night and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to imagine that that's the case, but no idea.
Is it only another 37 minutes?
Yeah.
But it adds up
to like 2 days into it, you're already like 1 hour off and stuff. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that we call them days, they call them sols.
Sols, yeah.
Sols.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cute.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, so we celebrate the sols of on Mars. Yeah.
That's cute. Eolanth, just straight up, wants to know, is there life on Mars?
I want to say that there's probably like no way that we took every single bug off the rovers that we sent. So like maybe there's like some little microbe still alive. And I want to say that, you know, maybe there were microbes way early on.
This was a very pregnant pause. Pregnant with moon rocks.
Maybe. I'm not going to say, you know what? I'm just going to say yes.
Okay. This is a good prediction, because later, like when they find it, you'll be like, please see my 2018 interview where I was said definitively yes.
I'm just going to say yes, but.
Okay. Christopher Barley had a great question that I hadn't considered. He says, I seem to remember that the northern half of Mars is completely smooth while the southern half is full of craters.
Yeah.
What's up? Do we understand what caused this and why the inconsistency?
Yeah, so like I think that maybe the major idea for this is that there was a big impact that that came in like at an oblique angle and just like shaved off the top of Mars, and then it was like low. And there's also a lot of debate about they're called the Northern Lowlands, the Southern Highlands, and so like the Southern Highlands are like way older, super effed up landscapes, and people think that, and there's like what we think were like catastrophic floods going up there. So there's some idea that there was an ocean up there too.
Whoa. Which
may explain that. And then like volcanism related to that like impact. So all things that like kind of smoothed it out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That's so odd. I didn't even know that about Mars.
Yeah. It's called the crustal dichotomy boundary. Oh, crustal dichotomy. So it's like, it's got just like half of the crust is high and like effed up and old, and the other half is low and smooth.
Oh, and that's young. So interesting. It's like it got an acid peel. And it's like new, but it's exfoliated.
Yeah, on half its face.
Yeah. It's like, it was a Groupon. It was only for half of an acid peel. Thomas Mayer wants to know, thoughts on Elon Musk and nuking the poles of the planet. What is that question about?
Yeah, so there's this idea that like if you want to make the atmosphere of Mars thicker, you could just like melt the poles, and so all that water and carbon dioxide that's like trapped in dry ice and water ice will be in the atmosphere.
Got it.
Yeah, but I love Mars. It's like really pretty as it is.
Yeah,
I don't really want to do that, so that's my opinion on it.
And also, now that I'm a Mars expert, there's not going to be an atmosphere to keep all that stuff in, or would that give the atmosphere to keep it in? Is there enough of a shield?
Yeah, I don't think you'd have to protect it.
Okay.
It would go away eventually, like the rest of Mars' atmosphere did.
I mean,
weren't careful.
I'm pretty much like your coworker now, because I know so much,
yeah.
Right? Okay, cool. Just checking. How do you feel about Elon Musk's fetishizing of Mars?
Yeah, I mean, like the same. I'd be really sad if I looked at Mars and it was just like another Earth, because it's so cool that it's not, and it like it's like so fascinating. So it's like what, you know, your favorite desert landscape, and then all of a sudden it's a suburb.
Yeah.
It's like not the same. It's so lame.
Suddenly there's a Best Buy on Mars and you're like, the fuck?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like a Chick-fil-A. You're like, who are you, Mars?
Yeah.
Why does Elon Musk have such a boner for Mars?
I don't know.
He's so horny for it. I'm going to look into that. So why does he love it so much? I'm not quite sure, but he has said that space travel is the best thing we can do to extend the life of humanity. And he said that he wants to die on Mars, just not on impact. Now, in part one of Areology, I mentioned my hardcore, brilliant scientist friends, Casey and Christine, both NASA scientists, who introduced me to Jennifer. So the day after this episode went up, Casey and Christine happened to have seen their other pal, the science fiction writer, Kim Stanley Robinson, who I mentioned. He's the writer of these really beautiful books, the Red Mars series, that people love.
I naturally freaked out, and Casey and Christine were kind enough to conduct an impromptu interview with them that they just recorded on one of their phones.
Hi, Ellie. Hi, Jennifer. It's Stan Robinson.
To get his take about interplanetary habitation. What did a brilliant science fiction writer who owned describing Mars say about us being on Mars?
Well, it's a wrong idea. So you don't want a wrong idea hanging out there with the notion that, and I think actually, and maybe it's one of these ideas that floats around the internet at the level of commentary that isn't really thinking. So maybe nobody really believes this idea and it's not that much of a moral hazard. But the notion that we have any other place than Earth is clearly false. And it's not that you couldn't terraform Mars, it's just that it might take 10,000 years to do it, and we've got a 100-year emergency that we're living in. So the timescales are badly off, and you don't want to ever think that we've got any other place than Earth. There, one thing that you do keep hearing from people is the idea that if we had 5,000 people on Mars, then they're living semi-independently of Earth, and then Earth was somehow, by some mysterious and basically fictional disaster, that everybody on Earth died, that after that, those 5,000 people from Mars could come back to Earth, and then it would all be okay. That you don't want to have all your eggs in one basket, this is how it's put, that there should be a backup to humanity itself. To me, the badness of that idea is not only the moral hazard, like maybe we could just go ahead and blow ourselves up, but that would be any kind of compensation for the loss of so many humans. That humanity isn't that valuable. That if we were to lose all of humanity on Earth and all of the rest of the mammals, et cetera, who cares if some humans come back 20,000 years later? We probably should have gone extinct at that moment from our own stupidity. So I'm completely against that whole line of thought of we need an emergency population somewhere else in case we accidentally killed everybody off on Earth. You can't kill off everybody on Earth. We're like cockroaches. The only conceivable thing that might do it is a gigantic asteroid impact. To detect and deflect asteroids that are incoming and save ourselves from a big old bang is the obvious first thing that spacefaring work ought to be devoted to.
So, saving our species while kicking it on an annex planet while Earth burns? Maybe not a good idea.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank. Some things should be boring, like banking. Boring is safe and reliable. You don't want your bank to be exciting or unexpected. Unexpected is for podcasts about bizarre scientific revelations, not banks. PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life. PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865. Brilliantly boring since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Inc. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC. Warmer, sunnier days are calling. Do you know what that means? It means I won't be making soup over a hot stove. I will be making Factor because they are fresh, never frozen meals that are dietitian approved. They're ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And watch out, they're delicious. I was like, are they really as good as people say? I have some neighbors. One of them's a nurse. One of them is a firefighter. And yes, they're both as attractive as they sound. They're like, yeah, we love Factor meals. And I was like, I bet you do. You're gorgeous. Boom. Tried them. I was like, these are delicious. They're also good for days when I'm lazy. They have 35 different meals. You'll always have new flavors to explore. I have never had a Factor meal that I've been like, nah. They've all been so good. Restaurant quality meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon and shrimp and blackened salmon. Also way more healthy and less expensive than takeout or ordering in. So there you go. Trust my hot neighbors. Head to factormeals.com/ologies50 and use the code ologies50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month. That's code ologies50 at factormeals.com/ologies50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next month while your subscription is active. Bon appetit. You're welcome.
Hi, I'm the person whose closet is put in color order, but I'll also pick up an earthworm without thinking twice. In fact, I did yesterday. It needed my help. I'm not afraid to be a little messy. Human nature is messy, but nature can help us embrace it. I love the brand Seventh Generation. Their laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with the power of bioenzymes. That's exciting. You wipe your hands on your pants after you pick up an earthworm? Seventh Generation is like, don't worry. Hug a dirty tree. Huff some bark. It's good for you. That is the power of Seventh Generation. Find laundry detergent and other laundry products at seventhgeneration.com. I love worms.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. Capella University's game-changing FlexPath format helps you learn at your own pace and fit earning a degree into your life. From before you enroll to after you graduate, you'll be supported by people who are invested in your success, so you can pursue your goals knowing that help is available if you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Sandy Moore wants to know, how much time and money do we spend studying Mars and the Earth's oceans? Should we focus on one more than the other when it comes to making life better for life on Earth? Like, essentially, why are we studying Mars so much when we are catastrophically fucking up Earth?
Yeah, there's actually a lot of people say, you know, we know more about Mars than we know about the bottom of the ocean. It's like really hard to study the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, Mars is like a thing that makes people so curious, and like it just like broadens our perspective. I mean, so does the bottom of the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to really say we shouldn't study the bottom of the ocean,
right?
But
also, like, there's that necklace from Titanic down there.
Yeah. Mars, like, a lot of the reason we study Mars is because it was, like, early on in its history was so Earth-like, and so now it's, like, basically an old version of Earth, and it's, like, so fascinating to see how it evolved, and so, whereas, like, I don't know, you could say that about the ocean. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't compare them so much, but...
Maybe it's, like, a cautionary tale.
Yeah, yeah. You know? That could be us, like... Cold and dusty.
Yeah, like when you watch,
not careful,
like E! True Hollywood Story, and you're like, oh man, what happened, you know?
Yeah,
what happened to them? So if you ever think that your life is kind of slow and boring, just think, we are experiencing like a live fast, die young, crash and burn, tawdry, cautionary tale every day just by using plastics and fossil fuels to ruin the planet. This was meant as like a lighthearted aside, but now I'm depressed. Anyway, Mars exploration is important both scientifically and existentially, Jennifer says.
Okay, so maybe I'm going to say that it's a cautionary tale thing.
I think it serves to like broaden our perspective of life and of the solar system and the evolution of it. And it's just like a great thing for us to think about. So that's how it, I think it gives us a little bit more of a perspective.
Yeah. Do you think people have a lot of existential crises thinking about Mars and other planets, and that this isn't the only planet? Like, do you think that it's psychologically a lot of people kind of grapple with Mars and other planets as a concept?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think especially when we start to think about life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So... what does it all mean? You know, we're not alone. Mm-hmm. On this, the Earth's not the only planet. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
how big? There's like more Earths now, you know, like with all these exoplanets being discovered, super Earths and other types of planets. Yeah. Do you think people often like feel very small when they think about these things?
Right. But I think it's almost a relief. Maybe. To feel like you don't matter.
Oh, yeah.
There's a relief in that. Like, everything seems so huge. Parking tickets and like this person like didn't follow me back on Instagram or whatever. And then you're like, oh shit, I'm just like a tiny microbe that doesn't matter. Maybe I can relax a little bit.
Yeah. Unless you start to think that we are the only life, and then you're like, we're the only life and we're fucking it up.
Oh no. Yeah.
You could take it both ways.
You're like an only child who ends up like being a hellion.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do think that having an appreciation, fostering an appreciation for other planets, maybe does make us look back. At least the question is being asked, Sandy Moore. Like, should we be paying more attention to our own planet? Maybe appreciating Mars makes us have more appreciation for our own planet, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that Mars research is wasted money at all. I think it inspires a lot of people, and it's super fascinating, and we learn a lot about it. And gives us a lot of perspective. So
for real, yeah.
I don't think that, yeah. In terms of like how much money we spend on it and stuff, I think it's worthwhile.
Right. Do you know how much people spend on like hair restoration and Viagra?
Yeah.
Like a lot of money. So just a little FYI, the U.S. spends about $1.5 billion per year on Viagra. It's like $70 a pill. I had no idea it was so costly. Did you know that? Don't tell me. So the U.S. Department of Defense alone spends roughly $84 million
annually on dick pills. So many dollars, so many dicks. Now, Americans spend $800 million a year on hair restoration, and we collectively spend $8.5 billion on manicures in the U.S. every year. So I don't know. When it comes to what we spend our money on, I have no answers. I have no answers. It's all confounding. I mean, we should probably spend more on food for people who need it, and clean water, or corn dogs. Hugs are free. I don't know. I don't have answers.
Billy Marino wants to know, from the data we've gathered so far, have we learned anything from Mars that has significantly changed the way we understand Earth?
Yeah. So, okay. So this is, I was thinking about, we compare Mars a lot to early Earth. And so in that sense, it is a little bit, we have talked about a little bit about it, because it gives us this different perspective of our own planet and like how these planets have evolved. But then there's also these like fundamental differences between Mars and Earth. Like Mars doesn't have a magnetic field now. Mars doesn't have plate tectonics. Mars is super iron rich. Like, what do those differences mean for us? Like, because we only have one data point here. Now we have like more info on this other planet and seeing how those things make it different. So that's like, those are the big things that we learned just like comparatively. Mars gives us a glimpse into the early solar system and stuff that was going on in that early time. Ooh. And then we learn like processes that happen on Earth could have happened on Mars, but like in totally different ways, like sand ripples. Like my friend Mathieu did this work where it's like he found these like ripples on sand dunes on Mars that like are subaqueous here, but like they're just like, because of the Mars atmosphere is different, they happen.
Oh wow. Yeah. So we can compare geologic features and realize that they can be created under two completely different sets
exactly.
of conditions.
And it's like kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah,
because you're like, oh, this would lead you to believe it's definitely this causing it, and it's like, not really.
Exactly.
Ooh, yeah. That's creepy. That's cool.
So I think that's like really valuable stuff.
Okay. Baron wants to know, since once there was water on Mars, is Mars dust as horrifically nasty as lunar dust? And apparently dust on the moon had no water to erode around the edges. And so it was spiky and super damaging to equipment and fleshy bits like, say, lungs.
Yeah. So the Mars dust, in terms of like it being sharp and stuff, it's not as sharp as moon dust. So it's like really fine. It's like just like Earth, a lot of ways like Earth dust, but it has sometimes it has like salt and stuff in it that are really toxic. So like you don't want to eat it necessarily, but it's not gonna like kill you either. I think you probably need to wear like a dust mask, but it's, you know, otherwise I think it's probably fine. And actually they study there's like experiments where they have like fake Mars dirt and dust, and they grow stuff in it.
Oh,
just like thinking about if we could grow stuff on Mars. So.
Does it work?
Yeah,
it does. Mm-hmm. So from Andy Weir, taking your desiccated feces and mixing them with Mars dust possibly could work.
Yeah, I think they have to do some stuff to it, but like I think the idea is like, could we? And I think the answer is yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you guys have to put money in a jar every time someone in your lab says, let's science the shit out of this?
No one ever says that.
Okay, just checking. If someone did, would you guys be like, oh, come on?
I think so. I think there'd be some eye rolls going on.
Catherine Woodrow and Michelle Sullivan both asked about microbial life on Mars.
Yeah.
Which type of bacteria do you think would be the most likely to be found? Michelle Sullivan was like, cyanobacteria?
Yeah, so like extremophiles, I think for sure. I couldn't like tell you a specific bacteria, but like extremophiles are things that live in extreme places. And so I think that's what we could find there. And I think there are some cyanobacteria that fit that category. And then like these microfossils that they thought were in this meteorite, those were mm-hmm. magnetotactic bacteria. So if it were true that mm-hmm. that they were fossils, then maybe we could find that there.
Ooh.
And since Mars did have a magnetic field, it's not totally out of the question that they could have used it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And there's a lot of iron there, so it's another possibility.
So quick aside, I got to tour JPL with my lovely NASA engineer friend, Holly Bender. Hi, Holly. And I was particularly struck by the observation deck that looked into a clean room, which appears to be a scene from Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but with more golden capped on space tape and wires and less candy. And I was like, these people, building these rocket ships? Like, do they have to shower 12 times a day every time they come in and out of this room? How does this work? If I applied to NASA, would they hook me up to a lie detector test to find out how often I actually wash my hair?
How do they know when they're building the rovers and when they're in the clean room that, like, it's actually clean?
I think they have a bunch of these, like, things that measure how many particles are in the air.
Okay.
Yeah, so they, like, have to be below a certain particle count. And then I think they also, like, probably autoclave a bunch of stuff.
Right.
But otherwise, I don't know.
Jude Kenny wants to know, what color is the sky on Mars? Are there long sunsets or does it switch to dark quickly? And can you see Earth from Mars?
Okay, so the color of Mars, the color of the sky on Mars is like a butterscotch color.
Ooh!
Yeah. So the, which we know like from taking pictures and stuff of Mars, so there's a lot of like dust in the atmosphere. So it's dimmer. It's like way further from the sun than Earth is, so it's dimmer, but there it's still sunlight, but it's just darker. And so you think, and the days are about the same length. So I guess in a way, it gets darker quicker, but only because there's less light to begin with, maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah. But then the dust, like, interacts with the atmosphere and the sunlight differently than it does on Earth, because it's just, like, super iron-rich dust. And so I think that's why it's, like, a more butterscotch color than here. We have, like, this blue color.
I know that asking, like, why is the sky blue is a kid question trope. And I'm always a little embarrassed that I'm a grown adult and I don't really remember why it is blue. It's always like, oh, is the sky blue? I don't know. So if you're like, me too. I just looked it up for the both of us. So according to a NASA webpage made for five-year-olds, all the colors in the visual spectrum add up to white, but blue light is scattered more than other colors because it travels as shorter, smaller waves. So it scatters. We see it mostly blue. But on the red planet of Mars, the sky is this butterscotch color because of all the iron dust, which got me feeling very entrepreneurial.
Hear me out.
Yeah.
What if we open a brunch place called Blood and Butterscotch? It's all Mars themes. Everything is made of cast iron skillets. It's very nice. Iron rich.
Okay.
It's red. It's really cold, but we never turn on the heater.
And we never dust anywhere.
Never dust anything.
It doesn't sound that appetizing.
She gets points for honesty.
But, like, it could have, like, that, like, interesting factor.
Maybe we could only have, like, freeze-dried food.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Composting toilets. I'm going to workshop it.
Oh, yeah.
It.
Okay.
Kevin McPhillips wants to know. 5-year-old Finley McPhillips, I'm thinking as a relative, wants to know, would a helium balloon still float on Mars? Also, Finley, I'm sorry if you've heard me say the F word, like, 50 times during the course of every podcast.
So, yeah, I think helium is still like lighter than the atmosphere of Mars. So it could work, but like, I guess you'd have to. So the way we have like balloons here is that they're buoyant, right? So like they're less dense, but there's like has to be enough density difference, including like the weight of the balloon itself, like the plastic. So I mm-hmm. think if it was designed well, I think it could work. But I think it could be better if it was hydrogen. I think the short answer is yes.
Okay. What is one thing about Mars that people don't know that would really flabbergast them at a cocktail party?
Just how like wet it used to be. People often ask me, like, is it true that we found water on Mars? And I'm like, yeah, we found that like a million times already. Like, but that's the thing that they're often blown away by, mm-hmm. right? But I think it's just still, for some reason, not common knowledge yet that Mars used to be this like awesome place that was like not as cold and dry as it is now. It was like wet and
just lush pools and spas.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm, slimy. Maybe. Slimy. Well, I was just thinking, like, you said lush and I thought of like plants, but like, in actuality, if there was any life there, it'd probably be like microbes. So it's like slimy.
Yeah. That's okay too. What about some flim flam about Mars that you'd like to debunk?
Flim flam?
Yeah. What's some real horse shit that you're like, no?
Dang. That's a good question.
Is it that Matt Damon lives there?
So I got to make water and grow food on a planet where nothing grows. But if I can't figure out a way to make contact with NASA, then none of this matters anyway.
Once again, if you didn't listen to part one, number one, what is wrong with you? Why didn't you listen to instructions from your old dad? I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Two, also, The Martian recap was a book, then a movie with Matt Damon. stranded on Mars.
Oh, I think that actually that has generated a lot of misinformation is the dust storms. Like they are global dust storms, but they are not destructive like that. They're because the atmosphere is so thin. There are strong winds, but there's just not a lot of atmosphere. So it's like just like a breeze, really. So like the whole premise of that, which is was like the major thing that was wrong with it, was that they were like stranded because there was that huge dust storm and destroyed all their stuff, right? But yeah, not gonna happen.
Because there's not, the winds wouldn't create that much force because it's not pushing a lot of molecules that are in the atmosphere.
There things like aren't impacting you as much.
Right, because there's not a lot of air that's actually pushing past
you. I think it's like 1/100 the amount of stuff in the air.
Oh my God.
Something
okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
That is some solid flim flam that you just debunked. I never would have thought of that because you think about the dust storms and you're like, it's pretty much a hurricane full of dust.
But that's what people think. Yeah. They think it's like this crazy catastrophic thing. But yeah, no, it's just like a little dusty.
Have you been caught in dust storms in Arizona or Mojave, or like, have you been to Burning Man during a dust storm?
Yeah. Pretty much all of those things have happened.
Really? Have you been to Burning Man?
Yeah.
How is it?
I went in like 2007 and like I had a good time, but I don't know that. Well, I obviously haven't been back.
FYI, Burning Man is a festival set on this big dry lake bed in Nevada, and it features a lot of Instagram worthy chainmail bikinis and steampunk hats and furry boots and glow sticks and electronic music. And for some people, a really sexy Saturn and Jupiter's moon situation. If you catch my drift, kids. So some people really into it. Others, not so much.
I didn't do like so many drugs, you know? So I think that's how a lot of people have fun.
Right.
And then I thought it was like a cool experience, but that I could just do that experience not pay $400 for it.
Right. So I think it costs even more than that now.
Yeah. I think when I went, I even applied like for a low income ticket. I was like, I'm a student, but I really want to go to this. And then they gave it to me and I sent them like drawing.
That's nice.
Yeah. But I think you can't do that now. I think it's like really intense.
I think it's more intense. But what were the dust storms like?
It was like really bad. I remember I was wearing goggles, and I had like a bandana over my face because that's what you do there. Could have had a dust mask on, but no one has dust masks on.
So you gotta get hip
bandanas
to that.
Yeah. But yeah, like people's tents were blowing over and stuff, and I was riding a bike around the playa and like couldn't see anything, like would lose your sense of direction really easily, and it was really abrasive on your skin.
So if you need to go down a YouTube rabbit hole, and you do, I highly recommend typing in Burning Man plus dust storm, also known as a haboob, which is appropriate for a festival that celebrates the freedoms of toplessness. So a user named Just Joe captured one dust storm just ripping into the glamping oasis, and it just looked like it turned it into a science fiction nightmare.
It's a haboob! Oh, shit!
Also, as long as we're diving into the etymology for areola in this episode, why not follow up with a nugget on boobs? So haboob and boobs, totally different word origins. The meteorological event comes from the Arabic for blowing furiously, while the mammarian features get their names from the German for teats and grandma, bubby. So is this podcast getting too weird? Is it getting uncomfortable? I'm here to present facts. I just want to give you facts. What were we talking about? Dust storms. So are the dust storms at Burning Man worse than on Mars?
100%.
Wow.
Sure. Yeah. Way worse.
Wow. More art cars, though.
Yeah.
And more.
But you can't see them.
You can't see them.
No.
That's really good to know. I never would have guessed that. What is one thing that about your job?
It sucks.
What do you hate?
I guess, like, some days I don't want to look at pictures on the computer.
You said that in such a confessional tone, like, Mom, I don't like your meatloaf.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool sometimes, but other times I'm like, I want to go outside. Yeah.
Can you ever take your desktop and drag it outside? Or do you have like 4 huge monitors?
No, actually, I could work outside. It's more that like I'd rather be looking at a rock than a picture of a rock some days.
I get it.
Yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
It's like looking at a picture of your long lost love. You're like, I'd rather be just hanging out with
exactly,
you.
Exactly, yeah.
I get it.
And also, like, I do get asked a lot, is it true we found water on Mars? That might be like maybe my least favorite question. Although maybe it should be my favorite question.
But what do you say to that? Are you just like, do you, the first time are you like, we did? And then are now you just like, duh.
Yeah, I try not to. But I'm like sometimes a little bit too honest. And then I'd be like, yeah. And that's like the opposite attitude I should have for people who are getting excited about Mars, which I love. So maybe that's why it should actually be my favorite question. I'm working on that.
You gotta flip the script.
Yeah, I need to do that. Yeah. And sorry.
Then, what's your favorite thing about Mars or your job surrounding Mars?
I love that I can be paid to think about another planet and what it used to be like and what we could have been like, and just these like crazy questions that are, you know, really removed from the day to day. But that, like, that's my job.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I could have a really practical job, but I instead get to do this really out of this world thing.
Literally
out, yeah, of this world. And it's like really cool to be part of these teams.
And so you're excited about the 2020 rover. That's the thing that you're stoked about.
I'm stoked about that. I'm stoked about a lot of things.
Anything else that you're just like,
ah! I'm sorry that I turned into what sounded like a drunk dolphin. That was a happy noise.
Like, a thing I really want to look at are dry lakes in the Mojave and like relate them to Mars. And so that's like another thing that I'm like super psyched to be able to do, hopefully.
And any advice to anyone who's like, I want to work on Mars?
Yeah, there's so many ways to get involved with Mars stuff. And like one great thing about NASA is that all of our data that we get is publicly available. You can, anybody with the internet can go on the internet and look at like dope pictures of Mars for free, download data the rover gets. Like, anybody can have the same data that the scientists who work at NASA have. So you can literally just become, you can just do that on your own, and you can go to like seminars and stuff and meet people and read books. Like, there's tons of podcasts and stuff like that. There's like a million ways to get involved with NASA stuff, and there's lots of NASA outreach that is like pretty accessible, I think, to most people.
Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you. I was so excited. Thanks for caring about Mars.
Dude, I do care about Mars. I love Mars even more now.
Great.
Yay! It worked.
So there you have it. I am so much more about Mars than I was before meeting the amazing Dr. Jennifer Booz. Now, to become her friend, either online or in Flagstaff, again, her Instagram, Bugaboos, Bugabuz, where she posts photos of insects and rocks, and her website, what a destination on this world wide web. It features self-portraits of her as a turtle with octopus hair. It's gorgeously perfect. It's JNNFR.BZ. So it's her name, no vowels. Now you can find Ologies at Ologies on Instagram or Twitter. I'm on both at Allie Ward with one L. And to support the podcast, to make future episodes possible, you can head to, if you want to, patreon.com/ologies for hats and swimsuits and pins and totes. It's ologiesmerch.com. We have you covered. And once again, summer sale code, Campologies. 10% off everything in the shop in July. And huge thanks to Shannon Feltis and Bonnie Dutch for helping me run that. And thank you to Aaron Talbert and Hannah Lippo for adminning the Ologies podcast Facebook group, which is really full of the internet's kindest and most lovable nerds. No turds among them. It's amazing. Thank you, as always, to Stephen Ray Morris, who painstakingly pieces these episodes together from a 30-page transcript and makes each episode so, so much better. The music is by Nick Thorburn of the band Islands. And special thanks to NASA engineer working on the Europa Clipper mission, Christine Corbett at Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, on Twitter, and her husband, Casey Handmer, C.J. Handmer, H-A-N-D-M-E-R on Twitter, also of NASA's JPL, for being such wonderful pals and supporters of Ologies and conducting that supplemental interview with sci-fi writer Kim Stanley Robinson. What a surprise that was. Now, if you listen past the credits, you may know that I tell a secret at the end of every episode. In this one, this might be the most embarrassing episode. That's not true. I have more embarrassing secrets. I just haven't told you them. But this is pretty up there. So a few people asked me this week about Mars being in retrograde until August 27th. And confession, I just read a whole article about it, even though I don't want to believe in it, and I don't. But still, I'm like, should I not sign any contracts until after August? But I also just didn't understand what retrograde even was. And it turns out that it just means that it looks like the planet is traveling backwards in the sky, but it's kind of an optical illusion. So I emailed Jennifer and I asked, is there any possibility in any realm scientifically that Mars being in retrograde could fuck with anything for real, like electronics or angering ghosts? And she said, I usually say that an apparent retrograde orbit has no bearing on anything physical because it's literally just a change in perspective, but the orbits are still the same. But as for ghosts, though, maybe they don't understand orbits and they live their afterlives strictly by apparent motions in the sky. So if Mars decides it wants to go backwards, they might also go backwards? Question mark, question mark, question mark. So I believe she was humoring me and entertaining my questions about Mars retrograde. I appreciate it. Okay, keep asking smart people stupid questions, because I think that they love it. I think it's good for all of us. Thank you for listening. I heart you all very much. Bye-bye.
Pachydermatology, homeology, cryptozoology, lithology, nanotechnology, meteorology, olfactology, mephology, seriology, cellology.
If a friend asks how you're doing, and you say,
I'm okay.
When the truth is,
I don't want my problems to burden anyone.
Or you say,
hang it in there.
Because
if I ask for help, they'll just think I'm weak.
Then this is your sign to call, text, or chat 988 for free, confidential support. Anytime. You don't have to hide how you feel.